Phil Cagey is perhaps one of the most admired guitarists in music today. His fans range from those who aspire just to be able to play his mistakes.
Wow, I like that. Play his mistakes.
To professional musicians who have been strongly influenced by his style, and everyone in between, like Tim the Tool across the board from me, who's a creepy fan, as well as myself. And yet there's this solace in his beautifully penned lyrics and memorable melodies. He's just not some raging Joey Sats, right? He's just not some melodic Alan Holdsworth.
I like that. You're pulling out names there. Pretty
Thank
good.
You. Thank you.
Not just some creepy Tony Iommi.
Yeah. Phil's solo career has spanned more than 40 years and has included over 60 solo albums, both vocal and instrumental, 8 releases with his band Glass Harp. Remember them?
Oh, yeah.
As well as numerous duets and trio albums. One of the most sought-after studio guitarists, Phil Cagey also continues to sell out concerts all over the States. And I would say other places, too.
Yes.
It's just not about them down there.
Yeah.
With his ever-changing style ranging from rock and roll to fully orchestrated instrumental compositions. I'm going to say that again because there was a lot of syllables. His ever-changing style ranging from rock and roll to fully orchestrated instrumental compositions. PhilCagey.com. That's K-E-A-G-G-Y. K-E-A-G-G-Y. I just had a musician friend of mine send me a message and say, I cannot believe you're going to have the Phil Cagey on the show. Hopefully he's on the line.
Yeah.
Hello, is this the Phil Cagey? Hello?
Yes, can you hear me?
Testing, 1, 2.
Can you hear me?
Is this the United States of America calling? How are you?
Good. Did you not hear me at first?
No, I heard you. I heard you, yeah. Hey, Phil, dude.
Yes.
I know it's every time I think about having you and guys like Randy Stonehill on the show, my brain goes right down to memory lane. And when you have those kind of interviews, does it drive you a little squirrely? Like, because you're still producing some pretty incredible stuff, but people want to go right back and trip down Glass Harp Alley.
You know, you're correct about that. For instance, someone told me, hey, you're on XM Radio. I go, what are they playing? I think it's from the second Glass Harp album, 1971. You know, I've made so much music ever since then, you know, and a good deal of it is instrumental and, you know, electric stuff, acoustic stuff, some Spanish guitar-ish stuff.
Hmm.
And I've just, you know, taken a great pleasure in being able to create with my fingers, you know, the stuff that's in my heart, my mind, and my head, you know. And also, I've always loved great sounding guitar players, and the list is very long. And
The list is so long. I had a friend. I was living in California for a while, up at a place called Hume Lake, and my roommate was this guitar nerd. I mean, total nerd. He slept with a whammy bar. You know what I mean? He was that kind of a nerd.
A Bigsby, you know, whammy bar.
Yeah. The what?
He could get help for that.
He should get help for that. But no, he introduced me to Alan Holdsworth, to Steve Vai, to Joey Sats. I say Joey Sats because Tom Emanuel's a friend, and that's what he calls him. So, you know, I have to do that.
Yeah.
And who else? Alan Holdsworth. You know, just all – and Dixie Dregs and Steve Morse. I mean, just so much amazing stuff. And, of course, he was a freaky, creepy fan of yours as well. Like, he had your poster on his wall.
Well, I had a Beatle poster on my wall, you know, but I didn't pray to him.
I know for a fact that Paul McCartney didn't actually die. He just became Phil Cagey.
Oh.
Yeah, that's right.
I don't think so, but, you know, he's a hero. Great songwriter, great voice, great history,
yeah.
And great influence.
Did you see his carpool karaoke with James Corden?
Oh, yeah. I saw it a couple times. It was very enjoyable.
I love that so much. So much.
Yeah, you know, the only thing is, you know, when James has been with all the other stars and they sing, you could really differentiate their voices from James. But when James was singing with Paul, I think the adrenaline was pumping so intensely that he was just louder than Paul. And
and
he's younger than Paul, but, you know. I think Paul's mic should have been up a touch more.
No, I think they did it on purpose. I don't think Paul's voice vocals are really where they're at. I mean, he's 112 years old. So, you know, I think they did it. Listen, Phil Kagi.
He's doing great at his age, and I give him kudos. You know, we did meet, he and I.
Oh,
and
you did?
Yeah, we met. This is a cool bit of history. Back in September 1990, Linda McCartney's sister, she was working at a production company, and she asked me if I would be interested in doing a song. And we were introduced by a mutual friend that works in Virginia. And we got together, and she started coming to my concerts once in a while, and then she'd bring her fiancé, Donald, to the concerts, and we became all very close friends, Bernadette and I, and they, and them. And so she asked me to be the music in her wedding to her fiancé, Donald. This is Laura, Linda's sister. And she said, oh, by the way, you'll be the only music. I said, okay, so let's pick some songs. I did three vocal songs and an instrumental piece at a small wedding ceremony, about 50 people. But beforehand, she said, oh, by the way, Paul and his family are in the wedding party. And
I, oh.
So I swallowed really deeply. And so I said, okay. And then I told my friend Jim Olson, who built my acoustic guitar I love so much, and he said, oh, Phil, you know, from Minnesota. He goes, oh, Phil, I got to tell you, I've got this left-handed Olson that the guy can't pay for it, and I wonder if you'd mind put it in Paul's hands and mean the world to me. I said, I can only try.
Yeah.
And we went through the protocol of everything, you know. Linda asked her brother John. She asked Paul, Linda. They asked their father, Lee, and went through all that. And then we ended up, after the wedding, before the reception dinner, up to a guest room, and we sat, and, you know, hello, and Linda said to Paul, Phil's got a gift for you here. And so I opened up the case and gave him this left-handed Olsen as a gift from Jim. I was the delivery boy, and he smiled really big, and he smelled inside the guitar hole, the sound hole. And he goes, oh, it's lovely, beautiful. And they says, for me? And I said, yeah, it's for you. It's from Jim. And he said, well, great, thank you. And so where's yours? So it's over there. Get it out. And so we sat there and we played pieces like, you know, a bit of Blackbird, a 12-bar jam, blues, and then did this tune called I'm Caring, which was on his London Town album. And I'm, you know, I'm singing these songs. They're his songs. I'm singing. And then we do Put It There off the Flowers in the Dirt album. And he's correcting me on a couple chords. And I said, hey, Paul, you want to sing along? So he kind of joined in really subtly. And then he started singing a little bit more. And then finally, after 20 minutes, and my wife took a few pictures, Linda said, we got to go down to the reception dinner. And he said, ah, this is fun. You know, so that was a really great memory.
That's amazing.
Anyway, it's a cool memory, and I really give him kudos for hanging in there all these years.
Okay, so dude, you have got to have a few more of those stories. And you know, as just normal people, we sit there and listen to those stories and inject ourselves in them because we don't really have a life. Do you have any other this happened to me stories with this awesome person?
Well, you know, when Glass Harp. Was before we were the Glass Harp, I was in a band called Nuance and Exit, you know, high school buddies. And so we were doing gigs in the local area of Youngstown, Warren, and Pittsburgh and places like that. And we went, did a gig, and there was this band that we opened up for called the Measles. And I loved the guitar player. He played a flying V, had a vine pedal, an echo thing, and he was going through, I forget what amp, but he sounded awesome. And that was Joe Walsh.
Oh, come on.
Wow.
It's true. And so then we got talking. We became friends. And I said, you know, our guitar player is leaving. Would you like to come over and jam with us? And so he drove from Canton, I think it was, to Youngstown, which is, you know, 50 miles, I think. And we had a great little, you know, session, the drummer, the bass player, Joe and I. And I wanted Joe in the band, and he seemed open to it. And the guy said, no, he's going to steal the show. And so I said, what? So he, J- Joe went back, and I don't think he was disappointed necessarily. I think he was headed for great things.
Yeah.
And I don't think we would have been that band for him. Really,
no,
honestly.
No, I'm thinking not. I mean, you couldn't afford the hotel destroying bills, right?
Yeah, so what happened was he started the James Gang, and I started a group called Glass Harp. And at the time I was starting Glass Harp, I got a phone call from Eric Carmen, who was just starting a band called the Raspberries, and he wanted me to play in the band with him. I said, I'm sorry, Eric, you know. And I'm just like fresh out of high school. And I said, I'm starting a band. I'm kind of committed here. And so I started Glass Harp. But Glass Harp and James Gang used to do nights together at this club called JB's in Kent, Ohio. And we'd end up the night jamming together, Jeff Sploogie, you know, because we're both Jeff fans, and Jeff Beck.
Mm-hmm.
So and that was great. And I've met some wonderful people along the way, you know. But those are a couple stories. You know,
so
we opened
cool.
up for the Kinks in Carnegie Hall in November 1971, and that was a trippy night. And it was recorded, so you can actually hear it, I believe, on Spotify and iTunes. Black Live at Carnegie Hall, November 71, and what a night that was.
Yeah.
And I was 20 at the time, playing my Les Paul that I still use to this day. and it was recorded, and it's full of vim and vigor.
Yeah. Okay, now you're in Nashville, is that right? Are you living in that neck of the woods, or Franklin, or whatever, in that neck of the woods?
Yes, we're in Nashville, and we've been living here, this year will be 30 years.
30 years, okay. So there's two things. Number one, my pal Tommy Emmanuel just moved there. When I say just moved there, I guess he's probably been there now 8 years, maybe, I think?
Yeah, something like that. I've got a good friend I've made recently, Joe Robinson, Australian guitarist, who is a protege of Tommy and a very good friend. And he's just, 27.
Wow.
But yeah, I'm a huge fan of Tommy. I grin. I not only smile, but I grin when he plays. He's so entertaining and so proficient.
But see, here's the thing. I'm sitting here going, oh yeah, you guys hang out every Monday night and play cards and bring out your guitars and eat pizza. But you guys have never met?
Oh, no. We've met several times.
Oh, okay.
We've jammed backstage one time when we were doing an all-star guitar night that Muriel Anderson put together. And, you know, a lot of great players. The stage was full of them that night. You know, there was a lot of great players.
Incredible.
From around the world.
Yeah.
And we jammed a bit. And we also jammed last summer at the NAMM show at the Gibson Guitar Booth. I was playing a 335, and I felt this pat on my back. And I look up, and it's Tommy grinning. And I said, Tommy, do me the honor and grab that guitar, and let's play a little bit together. And somebody posted it, I think, on YouTube. It was just in a little swing bluesy jam, and it was really a blast.
Yeah. There's a guy that said this about Tommy a lot. He leaks light when he performs.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Hmm.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. I'm just going to stay with that. I'd like to have a more dramatic pause at the end of it to really emphasize.
But you had three uh-huhs.
He had what?
You got three uh-huhs.
Yes.
From Phil.
Uh-huh. Preach it, brother. All right, Phil, what's happening these days? Here's the word on the street. The word on the street is that you are stealing Peter Gabriel's players.
Well, there's a great story about that. This is how it goes. I've got a friend named Paul Grimsland. And Paul lives in Kingston, New York, right next to Woodstock. And he and I've been in touch over the years, really over the last 15, 20 years, I think, as friends. But then 10 years ago, I was playing a small concert in New Jersey. And Paul said, hey, I want to come. You know, I'm going to drive from Woodstock or Kingston to New Jersey. But Tony and Jerry want to meet you. And this was 2009. And, about that. And, or 2008. And they came literally with bass amp, drums, and I'm doing this solo concert acoustically. And then a friend of ours had a guitar, and he brought a guitar. And my doggy's barking. I'm gonna step outside here. We just jammed, you know. It was like kind of loose, you know, and all that.
Hmm.
But Paul felt there was some special stuff going on, and so he said, how would you feel about coming up in August to Jerry's studio for a few days and just see what happens. And so this was about 2009, and I went up there with my guitar. They provided all the pedals I needed and an amp, a great box amp, and I took my acoustic, and they had a bunch of guitars there anyway. I could do all kinds of things, baritone, 12 string. And we created songs, jams, over a number of days. Hmm. And then we took them home and listened to them, and then we kind of forgot about it, you know? I'd forgotten about it for years. I knew that there was going to be some work involved with editing to make it into a kosher album, you know. Really? What a pickle. And anyway...
Nice.
No, that was horrible.
I don't even know if that was the right word, you know.
Call it out.
But in any case, so it kind of remained on the hard drives for all these years. And Paul said, you know, 8 years or 9 years later, Phil, I got to come back down to Nashville, bring these files to you, and let's see if we can finish it up with guitar solos and parts. Hmm. I said, okay. So he came in January, over a year ago. Then he came again about in April. And by that time, we got it done. And I sent the files to the fellow that mixed it. I think it was Michael Causey up in the Seattle area. He mixed the album, and he did a phenomenal job. And it came out called The Bucket List. And then we recently went up. I went up for 3 days. Brought a friend of mine who's also a fine guitar player, Mike Bocelli. And Mike and I, we woodshedded all these tunes, and we played all but one song from the album live over five concerts, you know, in Woodstock and in Daryl's Place and New Hampshire and Sellersville Theater. And, you know, I didn't realize, but we got really tight within a couple of days. And there's some YouTube on there, like the pieces Midland Crisis that you opened the interview with. I love that tune. And then there's Caravan, and there's Carbon Stone, there's Blue Hawaii, there's Fearless, there's Sometimes We Up, there's another one called Sometimes 11. There's a ton of, not a ton, there's a good many songs there. So.
Sure. Now our fans, your fans, who might be listening to my show, can go to philkagey.com and grab all this stuff?
Oh, yeah. It's available on my website, philkagey.com, and iTunes. And if you don't have enough money, you can listen to it on Spotify, if you can afford Spotify. So.
That's good. Well, listen, so there's a couple things here. Number one, how do I say this? So I hesitate because I realize I'm starting to say this too much, Tim. So, but just so our listeners are aware and that you're aware, after 16 years, I'm finishing the show. My last show will be June 29th. And I wanted to have you back on before the end of my show because you were formative in my musical and spiritual growth. So I wanted to thank you for that. I specifically remember being out on the boat in the middle of the lake in Northern Ontario. The sun was setting. And I had brought your music with me because I needed to chill, unwind, and try to reach up somehow.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Is it Addison's Song? Is that what it's called?
Oh, on Beyond Nature, it's called Addison's Walk.
Addison's Walk. Mm-hmm. So that song came on, and just at the crescendo moment in that song, that first crescendo when it kind of builds, the sun pierced through the clouds in one of those, you know, Hallmark moment ways. Yeah, like I thought Billy Graham was tapping me on the shoulder. That's how intense it was. So that's a burned-in moment for me. You know, your music will forever be something. I remember when my son was young and I was taking care of him at home, your music just really helped me put my energies towards places they should be instead of where they were going. So thank you for that.
Drew, you are so welcome, and I enjoy talking to you and Tim. Hi, Tim, how you doing?
I'm doing good, thank you,
Tim,
Phil.
Actually, Tim doesn't matter, okay?
Phil, I love Phil.
Don't worry about Tim.
Yay, Phil.
So now now, in a little bit on the show, we're going to have a guy named, what's his name? Randy Stonehill.
Yes,
Randy Stonehill.
That's it.
Now, before, you know, we're going to talk to Randy at some point, but I just need to get your take on him. So is Randy, I mean, he's... Like, the wheels have fallen off the bus with him, right? He's nuts. Like, there's something wrong with him. Is that true?
I find him to be one of the dearest friends I've ever had.
Ah, crap.
Yeah, but he's funny. I mean, I toured with Randy. We wrote together. We toured in the 80s and the 90s. We met each other the same day I met Larry Norman back in 1972 at a Glass Harp show that Randy and Larry were playing at. And we've all been friends since then. Unfortunately, Larry has passed, but I consider him a really extremely great artist and a deep person. But, you know, Randy, I just saw him just a few days ago. I played on a new song of his on a new album that's being produced. It's a beautiful album. And I played electric and a classical guitar part for him.
Yeah.
And he's funny. You know, we did an album back in 2009 called Mystery Highway, which is very unpopular, but it's a really good album. And we did it, you know, in my studio and just paid the drummers and everything else, you know, just fell into place. And so he's a blast, and I recorded him. He's sincere. He loves Jesus. And
But hold on. Phil, look, you're known as one of the nicest guys in the industry, so just dial it back for a second, okay?
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Like, you don't want to hang out with him a lot, though, right?
I don't know. I've toured with him, and I was always the last one to appreciate his sense of humor. I was always kind of looking for him to make me laugh. You know,
yeah.
He's also very encouraging, and you know, he's got this very, very serious side to him.
All right.
The side that endears him to a lot of people.
It's getting disgusting and irritating right now. Randy, I want to say I tried as hard as possible to throw you under the bus with Phil Kagi, but he would not take it. Randy?
No, he's awesome.
Sorry
about that, Drew.
Randy?
yes, Drew. You know, that's I really appreciate that about you. You know, it's important that you harness your strengths and then you really milk them. And your radio program, shall we suffice it to say, it has not garnered an indifferent response. You know, people shrink back in horror, or they have their solicitors phone.
Yes, so, that is true.
You know, that's you're memorable. Though heaven knows we need to premedicate, but that's another story.
Oh my goodness!
You kooks to hate. So,
ladies and gentlemen, let me officially and formally introduce to you the man who shall now dominate the conversation, Mr. Randy Stonehill.
Well, thank you. It's scary. I mean, it's great to be with you, bro.
Would you stop it?
And of course, it's lovely to be with Mr. Kagi here, flapping our lips in unison in Radio Land.
Now, go ahead.
You're Mr. Radio. You're on the radio all the time, so let me speak.
Okay, sorry.
Okay.
Sorry. Pardon me.
It was the best of times. It was the worst of times. How much time do you have? No, okay. But I want to just say this one thing about Phil, because it's been such a privilege to know him and work with him.
This moment brought to you by Hallmark.
I'll just feel the love, bro. Come on, man. No, but I just got to tell you this one thing just about Phil and my relationship. This is kind of indelibly etched in my mind. We were on tour together. It was late. At night after a concert, we were the driver trying to get us to the hotel was lost. The band was exhausted in this dark kind of minivan or something that we were in, and I was standing up in the front of the vehicle, just trying to encourage the driver and just trying to stay somewhat lucid or as close as I come to that particular physiological configuration. Anyway, and so, and I was just found myself just, you know, tired but wired after the concert, and so I was just kind of riffing. I was just doing like James Brown after the barbecue, going, "Hey, somebody, get a jaw of the line, cut my belt off. I had too much barbecue." Right. And you can tell the band, the rest of the band, their heads are down. They kind of want to strangle me.
Yeah.
And I can't really blame them, but I'm just loopy. And I look, and there in the back of the van, I see Phil's it's certainly like in the spotlights or the headlights of the oncoming vehicles, I see his eyes. He's just looking at me, and he's smiling and nodding, going. And then he says, I hear his voice say, you know, I'm with you, man.
I'm with you, man.
I'm watching you. I'm watching
I remember
you.
That.
It was just like, it was so encouraging. It's like, yeah, I know you chewed through your leash at the carnival. And but, you know, we're just going to, I love you. We're just going to try to get you to a warm, safe place
yeah.
where you don't harm yourself.
Yeah, yeah.
No, but it was so great. Just going, I'm your audience, man. I'm watching, you know. Everybody else wanted to, like, chuck me off the bus.
Yeah. You know what? Well, this is a perfect time for me to ask, while we have Phil Kagi on the line, I want to ask Randy Stonehill, because Phil Kagi is sort of known as, you know, one of the nicest guys in the planet and blah, blah, blah. Randy, do you actually have any dirt on Phil Kagi? Anything, like, have you ever seen him grumpy? Have you ever seen him lose his mind? Have you ever seen him in precarious situations that the inquiring minds want to know about?
I just really don't think that's any of your business, bro. You know? So, you know, just get a hobby.
Okay.
And read a book and
okay.
leave me alone.
All right.
No, I will, you know, I'll say this. If truth be told, then we're all in big trouble. No, I'm kidding. if truth be told, nobody walks on water except Jesus. And though Peter did give it a shot. But anyway, that's another. Oh, that was a baptism the hard way. Help me now. So no, I see. Okay, this, you bring this out in me. I'm a fairly normal individual.
No,
at least.
No.
I'm like, okay, all right,
no.
That was fibbing.
Yes.
Fibbing in Christian love. Now let me say this. No, you know, no one is larger than life. The road can be very wearing. It takes a lot of concentration and energy to make what we do look easy. But I will say, in all the years I've toured with Phil or been in the studio with him, I've never seen him get cranky or sharp, or edgy with the people around him. And I think, you know, again, we surrender our lives to the lover of our souls, and Jesus continues to change us from the inside out. And I've just really seen that in Phil's life.
Yeah.
And that's the short and long of it, long.
Yeah, yeah.
There you have it. I mean,
okay.
The man, I think, he's one of the best on the planet. But he knows where the gifts come from, and he's remarkably unpretentious, and by golly, he's fun at parties.
He's fun at parties. He's like a party trick, that is for sure. Phil Kagi, can we just talk to you just for a second? Do you mind? Is that all right?
Phil fell on the floor and he can't get up. sorry, I'm back.
What the heck was that?
Phil passed out when Randy was...
I know. It is like a sort of a noxious substance wafting through the air.
No, thank you, Randy. Bless you again.
That's what I meant to say. Thank you, Randy. Thank you. Phil, just before we release you from this hellish nightmare.
sorry.
Please release him or let him go.
How to lose a radio show in 3 easy steps.
2 easy guests.
Phil Kagi, first of all, I want to just let our listeners know again that he's not just the Phil Kagi of old, he's the Phil Kagi of new. He's got a lot of projects on the go, including one called The Bucket List. Is that true?
Yeah. Yes, and I've got a new one with my friend Rex Paul, and it's out and available by means of iTunes, and you can hear it on Spotify. It's called Illumination. It's a vocal album, and it's one of my best in years, I think. And of course, Rex produced it. And he's a multi-talented musician and fine singer, and it's a really good album, and I hope people enjoy it. And then I have a new one with Jeff Johnson of Camino Island, Washington, up there by Seattle. We've done our third album called Cappadocia. It's all instrumental, very, very movie soundtrack, very very rich in, you know, just rich in tones and melodies, and it's lovely. And then I just want to say one final thing about the bucket list. Tony Levin and Jerry Murata are two of the finest musicians I've ever played with in my entire lifetime. They are remarkable, and I just grinned when I watched these YouTube things with us, you know, because we only had a couple days rehearsal. And we all rose up to it, and Mike Piccelli did a fine job playing guitar with us. And, of course, Mike is producing Randy's current album that I played on a couple of days ago. Right, Randy?
I'm sorry, you're a little blurry on this side of the phone.
Oh, I am blurry. Okay, so I was just saying that, did I come through, Drew?
We can hear you fine. It's probably just, Randy, look on the back of your cell phone. Does it say Tonka?
You know, Randy.
Yeah, I think it was just that the 60s were rough on me, okay? But what did you say, Phil? You were talking about the thing that you and Mike and I did?
Yeah, I was just saying that Mike played guitar on the bucket list dates with me and Tony and Jerry, and then he's producing your current album, and it's a really fine, fine sounding record. Great songs written, and your performance is just stellar. So I got to play on one of your songs a couple days ago.
Yeah, thank you profusely.
Okay, Phil, we're going to let you go, but just before we say goodbye to you, I don't know what the question is or what I'm feeling here, but when I was thinking about, like, normally the first hour of my Saturday 4-hour live show is dedicated to a live in-studio performance by various recording artists. Very, very few of them have anything to do with Jesus. The music is penetrating the soul, and then it's just about the music. Mm-hmm. But around Easter, I try to find some, you know, some Jesus artists. And this is my last Easter show, and I was thinking, mm-hmm. I want these two guys to be my guests during this show, because for a couple of reasons, musically and personality-wise, you know, you guys are everything that I wanted to be growing up and still kind of want to be. You know, Randy, you and I have the kooky side, and we all, you know, Randy, you and I probably look to Phil and go, gee, I wish we were more mature like that sometimes, or talented, you know. And then I reminisce about the days of, like, the glory days of going to the Christian concerts and Larry Norman, they put red lights on him on stage, and he stops in the middle of a song and says, wait, you shouldn't have red lights on me. Isn't that from Satan or something? You know, Randy with the high leg kick and the big
cowboy hat,
the awkward white guy afro and the cowboy hat and the tight jeans and then Phil coming out and blowing everybody away and you know, the music. I don't know, just there was a time. That time is no longer. My question, before we say goodbye to you, Phil, is why? Why is that time no longer? We do not have that thing happening anymore.
Well, you just have to turn the record over. it's gonna start again. It really is. I can sense it. A lot of people can sense it. There's a lot of people who are hungry for the truth. And in Jesus is not only the truth, he's the most incredible example as to how we should treat one another. And he's been my hero. He's been my model. And I see him in so many of my friends. And I see people who are without him, and lives can be sad without the love of God in their hearts. So because this is Easter weekend, I wanted to say he is risen, and he's alive, and he's real, and he's personal. And he cares. And he's not there to condemn. He's there to save in any situation, incredibly, your life. And so that's what I'd like to say. Leave with my good friends out there listening.
Beautiful, beautiful. Phil, thank you for
everything.
For everything, man. Wow. Just for injecting so much into so many strangers' lives. That's the, you know, you will never know the impact you have had. And I'm glad, actually, because then you might turn into an arrogant jerk. Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much, my friend.
All right. Randy, do you want to say bye-bye to your little buddy, Phil Kagi?
Well, you know,
you huge.
What I usually say to my good friend is,
"Flame oil."
The father is like all the hell in the babe.
What? Dr. Simon Kish. Dr. Oops. Ooh, you don't want to hear that. You never want to hear the oops. We have this special bonding moment with the sort of the spirit of Jerry Lewis.
Riboflavin. Oh my goodness.
This broadcast brought to you by France.
It's not a rainbow. Got the string around my finger. Thank you very much. I know it's true.
I think I've lost my show. Hello. Testing. Hello. Testing. Hello. 1, 2, 3. Testing. Phil Gagey, buddy. Happy Easter to you, sir.
Hey, happy Easter to you guys.
All right.
It's been fun to chat with. This has been one of the funner interviews I've done.
Good. Good. We aim it for it to be much more funner. So thank
funner.
You. All right. Anyway. See ya, Phil Jerry Gagey.
Take good care, guys.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Randy, I actually blame you for being such an influence in his life.
Uh-huh. And I'm just going to try to receive that like a man. Just let the Lord just continue to...
Phil Kagey, you're supposed to hang up. Stop. You're not supposed to be eavesdropping on the call on the interview. Phil Kagey.
You're funny. All right, guys.
Bye, Phil. Walton. Bye, Phil. We love you. Bye.
Love you guys.
All right.
See ya.
Love you too, buddy.
Wow.
Man.
That was Twilight Zone-esque.
That was incredible.